Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Serial Killer Podcast, the podcast dedicated to serial killers. Episode 110. Who they were, what they did, and how. I am your Norwegian host, Thomas Wyborg Thune. Merry Christmas, dear listener. I am writing this episode on Christmas Eve here in my cozy office with the Norwegian King Winter, having finally returned with some proper snow outside. This is the second and final part of my Bruce MacArthur Redux series. Last episode, I gave you a brief recap of the case and went into detail as to who Bruce MacArthur was growing up. Tonight, I will give you details of his crimes and what eventually became his sentence. When I visited the case over a year ago, his case was steaming fresh. His last victim barely rescued from his clutches only a couple of months before I released the episode. But now that the blood has dried on the walls and the adrenaline has receded, we can look closer at the Santa serial killer case with a clearer vision. Enjoy. This episode is, just as quite a few of the recent ones this December of 2019, 100% sponsored ad-free. I work to keep the ads to a minimum, and I do that for you, dear listener. This episode would not be possible if it hadn't been for my dear patrons who donate their hard-earned money every month. In return, my patrons get exclusive bonus content on Patreon. This includes a brand new episode on torture, part 2 in the series, the death penalty, Norwegian Satanists, and a very special version of Monster Mash. More bonus content is coming real soon. So, head on over to patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast now to get access. Often, dear listener, The victims of serial killers are too quickly forgotten. And so it is that I wish to tell you a little bit about each of those we know lost their lives at the hands of Bruce MacArthur. Several of them have non-Western names, so apologies for my probable horrible pronunciation. Skandaraj Navaratnam, 40 years old. Navaratnam was MacArthur's first victim that we know of. The 40-year-old had moved to Canada from Sri Lanka in the 1990s as a refugee and settled into life in the city's gay village. He has been described as someone who was very social and jovial, and always ready to help out his friends. One friend said he was an educated and curious man with a strong interest in global affairs, and who was unbeatable at Scrabble. His laugh was just ridiculous. Jody Becker, a bartender at Zibbers and close friend of Navaratnam's, told the Toronto Star newspaper after he went missing. If Skanda started laughing, everybody started laughing, even if nothing was funny. End quote. When he disappeared in September of 2010, abandoning a new puppy alone in his apartment, his friends called police. According to court documents, police found a silver bracelet belonging to Navaratnam in MacArthur's bedroom during their investigation. Navaratnam knew MacArthur since the early 2000s, and they had dated. Abdul Basir Faizi, 42 years old. Faizi's disappearance in December 2010, along with that of Navaratnam and Majid Kayan, who went missing in 2012, prompted Toronto police to launch Missing Persons Task Force Project Houston, which was shuttered after 18 months. Faizi was married and a father of two. He divided his life between the Toronto suburb of Brampton, where he lived, and his social life in the gay village downtown. His family reported him missing, but because they didn't know his ties to the gay village, his disappearance largely flew under the radar of Toronto's LGBT community. During MacArthur's sentencing hearing, his wife said in a statement that his daughters, who were aged 6 and 10 when he disappeared, often still cry for their father. She said she is struggling to support the family. Faizi's car was found abandoned near a home that MacArthur had access to at the time of the killing. Majid Kayan, 58 years old. Like Faizi, Kayan was believed to have led two separate lives, one with his family and one in the gay village. Kayan was an Afghan immigrant and the youngest of many siblings. He had a wife and children, and also frequented many of the bars in the gay village, and kept an apartment in the area. His adult son reported him missing in the autumn of 2012, when he could no longer reach him. MacArthur told police that he had employed him as a landscaper, helper, and claimed to have had a brief sexual relationship with him. His brother told the court the following, and I quote, "I still have not comprehended how this crime happened. It has consumed the majority of my thoughts." End quote. Police believe Kayan was killed around the 18th of October, 2012. Surush Mahmoudi, 50 years old. Mahmoudi was a refugee from Iran and reported missing by his wife. In a statement to the court, she called him her soulmate and said she has been overwhelmed by grief at his brutal slaying. Police believe Mahmoudi was killed in August 2015.
and found a coat with his DNA on it in MacArthur's van during their investigation. Kirushna Kumar Kanagaratnam, 37 years old. He came to Canada on the MV Sun Sea in 2010, a ship carrying almost 500 Sri Lankan asylum seekers that arrived in Canadian waters that summer. His refugee claim was denied, and he was ordered to be deported. Police and family did not report him missing because they assumed he was in hiding. Kanagaratnam was close with his family and talked to them regularly, the court heard. Family members described in court documents the shock and pain they felt upon learning of his fate. Police have said it is not clear how Kanagaratnam came into contact with MacArthur, given he had no clear ties to the Toronto's gay village. Evidence suggests he was killed in January 2016. Dean Lisovic, 47 years old. Lisovic was MacArthur's sixth victim, but unlike the others killed by MacArthur, he was never reported missing to police. The 47-year-old was often found staying in homeless shelters in Toronto and worked in the sex trade. In a statement read in court, his daughter said, and I quote, "I will always have to live with knowing that I will never have a relationship with my father," end quote. His cousin told the court that his face lit up when he spoke about his daughter, and that he hoped to get his life together so he could do more for her. He also kept in touch with his parents until his struggles with mental illness landed him on the streets. But his uncle told the court that even then he would still occasionally send cards to his mother that had been searched out carefully for their expressions of love. His uncle Jerry Montanti said, and I quote, "He was a loving and caring man. He was not alone in the world," end quote. His name was added in February 2018 to Toronto Homeless Memorial, which remembers those who have died as a result of homelessness in the city. He is believed to have been killed sometime around late April 2016. MacArthur kept some of Lisowick's jewellery, which police later found in his apartment, according to court documents. Selim Esen, 44 years old. Originally from Turkey, Esen came to Canada in 2013. He disappeared from his home near the village in April of 2017. Esen's brother said, and I quote, "He was a very friendly, kind-hearted, open, independent-minded, and curious, passionate about learning new things, gardening, exploring new places, and meeting new people kind of guy," end quote. According to his family, Esen's tender and kind humanity came before everything else. The court heard in February 2018 that Esen spoke to his best friend every day, and when he did not reply to a text, his friend reported him missing. Esen had struggled in the past with substance abuse, but friends told the court during MacArthur's sentencing hearing that he had reached a turning point and hoped to help others in their recovery. He was described as a nature lover who enjoyed managing a cafe, who had a passion for sociology and philosophy, and who was generous and selfless with his friends. Many told the court they are still struggling to come to terms with his murder. MacArthur kept a notebook owned by Esen, which police later found in the serial killer's apartment. Andrew Kinsman, 49 years old. The first two charges laid against MacArthur by police was for the murders of Kinsman and Esen. It was Kinsman's disappearance in June 2017 that sparked a community-wide search and rekindled rumors of a serial killer in the gay village. Kinsman was active in the city's LGBT community, and friends hung posters of the missing 49-year-old around the village and nearby Cabbage Town, where he went missing. Soon after, police launched a task force, Project Prism, to investigate his and Erson's disappearance. His sister, Karen Coles, told the court in February 2018 the following, and I quote, "He wanted to make the world a better place for those struggling to survive," end quote. His sister continues to describe him as someone who, under his gruff demeanor, cared deeply about other people and who championed social justice issues. He was, according to her, an extraordinary, quirky, and caring individual. Police believe Kinsman was sexually involved with MacArthur, and they found the entry "Bruce" in Kinsman's diary on the 26th of June 2017, the day police believe he was killed. More than half of Toronto's 2.7 million residents identify as a visible minority. Around 15% are South Asian, and 1% come from the Middle East. The city is known for its inclusiveness, but it can still be a challenging place for new Canadian citizens. Nearly all of the men had disappeared from the Church and Wellesley neighborhood, also known as Toronto's Gay Village, between 2010 and 2017. Though the area's history as a LGBTQ-friendly enclave dates back years, of late, gentrification in the village has driven up the cost of rent, and the area mainly functions now as a meeting place for people who connect online and come into town for drinks. In November 2012, a month after Kayan's disappearance, the Toronto Police Service convened a task force to find out what had happened. Within a few months, they had uncovered clues to suggest Navaratnam had met with foul play. The leads, which initially pointed to an online cannibalism ring, were dismissed as fantastical and eventually ruled out. But they brought Officer Idzinga into the case. Investigators began by interviewing Navaratnam's friends. According to multiple reports, this included a then 60-year-old landscape designer, Bruce MacArthur, known as Santa, for his seasonal employment at a shopping mall. MacArthur was a twinkled-eyed grandfather who liked tropical birds and hated Donald Trump. At 5 feet 10 and 221 pounds, or 177 centimeters and 100 kilos to us metric users, Santa was unassuming in both appearance and demeanor. He was the type who baked muffins, sipped wine, and lavished friends with roses on their birthdays. A former friend had described him to police as, and I quote, "the kindest person I've ever known." The owner and sole proprietor of Artistic Design, a man-in-a-van landscaping business, he was popular with clients. His clients were often older, wealthy Torontians, who appreciated MacArthur's love of succulents, especially exotic varieties with thick, fleshy leaves. Police learned MacArthur had employed Navaratnam as a landscaper. The two had also dated, on and off, for years. MacArthur was interviewed, then let go. And having failed to find any criminal evidence, Project Houston, as the task force was named in 2013, closed down. Mahmoudi, Lisowick, Ayrson, Kinsman, and Kanagaratnam all met their fate over the next 4 years.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Us Norwegians are not exactly known for being overly social. And during winter here in Norway, seeing other people is a downright rarity. But we still need other people. We are humans, after all. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Everyone needs someone to talk to, even psychopaths, even your humble host. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/serialkiller today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/serialkiller.
By summer 2017, pretty much everyone in the village knew there was a serial killer in their midst. All of these men had gone missing, each with a connection to the neighborhood, most from social groups that were marginalized in one way or another. Even civilians with a glancing knowledge of the typical serial killer profile by now knew that many seek out those on the edge of society, people whose disappearances take longer to be noticed, if at all. In the 1980s and 1990s, Jeffrey Dahmer infamously operated within the gay community in Milwaukee by using his familiarity with its members and their social landscape to find targets, while also benefiting from the fact that many of his victims had fewer than average connections to society at large. More recently, the suspected serial killer I have also covered on this show, nicknamed the Long Island Serial Killer, is perhaps responsible for the deaths of up to 16 female sex workers on New York's Long Island. He is thought to have used the relative anonymity of Craigslist to solicit some of his victims. While the Toronto of 2017 was an undeniably more progressive place than the Reagan-era Rust Belt, it still had its share of the kinds of collective isolation that such killers could take advantage of. Officially, the police continued to deny what seemed obvious to many in the community. However, Officer Idzinga and a small group of detectives quietly launched a new investigation called Project Prism. By the summer of 2017, they had begun to look more closely at MacArthur. And they didn't have to dig too deep for signs that suggested a history of violence. On the 31st of October, 2001, police arrived at the apartment of a male escort who called 911 after awakening from a blackout. The victim had invited MacArthur into his apartment around noon that day and was considering showing MacArthur his Halloween costume when MacArthur, unprovoked, hit him in the head with a metal pipe that he had brought with him. "I don't know why I did it," MacArthur reportedly said after turning himself into police. In January 2003, MacArthur pleaded guilty to assault, causing bodily harm. He received a conditional sentence, barring him from the village and further contact with escorts. In 2016, MacArthur was investigated for a potential sexual assault, though police set him free without charging him. Itzinga's team learned that MacArthur was once a regular of the Black Eagle, the bar where Andrew Kinsman had worked. MacArthur had both dated Kinsman and employed him at Artistic Design, as he had with Navaratnam. He was also active on gay apps and websites, including Grindr, Scruff, Man Jam, and Silver Daddies. He was meeting guys, hooking up with them, employing them, and then, it seemed to investigators, murdering them. In September 2017, a month into Project Prism, MacArthur dumped his work vehicle, a maroon Dodge Caravan, at a scrapyard, taking a cash offer of $150. In October, police recovered the van and found traces of blood in the trunk and on the backseat, according to the scrapyard's owner, Dominic Vetere. Newly unsealed records suggest investigators began to remotely track MacArthur's movements and monitor his calls, starting in November. Then, in December, police obtained warrants to secretly enter MacArthur's apartment and clone his computer's hard drive. On the 17th of January 2018, police reportedly found another link, possibly DNA, that potentially connected him to two of the missing men. He was put under 24-hour surveillance while police prepared warrants for his arrest. At 10:30 in the morning of the 18th of January 2018, they observed a young man, later identified as a male escort, entering MacArthur's apartment building in Thorncliffe Park in central East Toronto. Police, who were still awaiting judicial authorization on all of their warrants, moved in as they were concerned for the well-being of the young man. According to the Toronto Star, they found a young man bound, restrained to the bed, but unharmed. The man was freed, and MacArthur was charged with two counts of first-degree murder in the case of Eason and Kinsman, taken into custody and driven to the Toronto Police Service's 51 Division building for processing. Using MacArthur's client list as a guide, the Toronto Police Service began searching properties across the city, initially 30 and then 100. At a small and neatly landscaped home on Mallory Crescent, where MacArthur did work on exchange for storing gardening tools, police found the planters I mentioned in the last episode, the ones filled with body parts. In the following months, six additional charges were filed for the murders of Navaratnam, Kayan, Faizi, Mahmoudi, Lisowick, and Kanagaratman. I released my first expose of the MacArthur case only 3 months after MacArthur's arrest. Since then, a lot more details of the case have been revealed. Bruce MacArthur's meticulous planning of murder, his methodical approach to the killings, and the posing, photographing, and retaining of personal items from his victims reveal similar patterns of behavior with certain types of serial killers. One expert, named Ju Jung Lee, a professor who specializes in serial killers, said MacArthur's murders were similar to those of Dennis Rader, aka BTK. Just as BTK, MacArthur would tie his victims up before killing them. However, where BTK would simply masturbate over his victims as they were dying or dead, MacArthur would rape his victims repeatedly before finally strangling them to death. The murder weapon was always a metal bar that had a rope attached to it to fashion a garrote. This created a mechanism whereby rotating the bar would turn the knot, increasing pressure on the neck. Sometimes the ligature would be turned so tight that the neck would snap. Always, the victims died as a result of the homemade garrote. Afterwards, just as BTK, he would pose his victims and photograph them, in order to have material to masturbate to later. The photos, dozens of them, showed victims with their eyes closed with a ligature around their neck. There were also photos of the victims being restrained and sexually tortured in various ways before being killed. Often, the victims were posed naked, with cigars in their mouth, shaved, and at times MacArthur dressed their corpses in a fur coat and a hat. MacArthur, just as BTK, kept some personal belongings, like bracelets and notepads, and also kept digital files of all the victims, categorizing them in subfolders on his computer. None of the Santa serial killer's victims were random acts of violence. He would carefully plan where and when to incapacitate, torture, rape, and murder his victims. And he always had planned how and where he should dispose of the bodies. Bruce MacArthur made his first court appearance on the 19th of January 2018. He was represented by lawyer Marianne Salih. A judicial pretrial was scheduled for the following 20th of June. The closed-door meeting with the Crown and defense attorneys and judge was to address issues such as resolving the case without a trial, for example by entering a guilty plea, the trial length, and procedural and evidentiary issues. On the 29th of January, standing before Justice John McMahon, Bruce MacArthur pleaded guilty to each of the 8 first-degree murder charges that he was facing, ending the possibility of any trial. On the 1st of February 2019, Ontario Superior Court Justice John McMahon ruled that Bruce MacArthur will be eligible to apply for parole after spending at least 25 years in prison. He will be 91 years old when his first chance of parole comes up. In his sentencing decision, the judge noted the gruesomeness of MacArthur's crimes, but said there is a quote-unquote fine line between retribution and vengeance. He also stated that MacArthur's guilty plea had spared the victims' families a lengthy, graphic, and very public trial, and combined with his age, this resulted in the relatively mild sentence. However, the judge also told the packed University Avenue courtroom that there is very little chance the former landscaper will ever be granted parole and will most likely die in prison.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And so it is that we come to the end of the Santa serial killer saga. I hope you enjoyed listening to me telling it to you. When I release my next episode, 111th in number, we will all have entered a brand new decade, the 20s. I look forward to it. I hope you do too. So, as they say in the land of radio, stay tuned. This podcast would not be possible if it had not been for my dear patrons, who pledge their hard-earned money every month. There are especially a few of those patrons I would like to thank in person. These patrons are my most loyal patrons. Before I list the esteemed members of the $15 plus club, I have gotten a special request from one of them. The patron in question is happily married, and he wishes to give his wife a truly exclusive Christmas present. My listeners' demands are my command. So, Skortnia, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, and I wish you a Happy New Year too. Your husband Trent sends his love. But let us not forget those of my dear patrons who are most loyal to the Serial Killer podcast. Many of them have contributed for at least the last 45 episodes, and their names are Maud, Amber, Anne, Cassandra, Evan, Jennifer, Jill, Kathy, Lisa, Lisbeth, Mark, Mickey, Philip, Russell, Sam, and Troy. You really help produce this show, and you have my deepest gratitude. Thank you. If you wish to join this exclusive club of TSK producers, go to theserialkillerpodcast.com/donate and pledge $15 or more to have your name read live on this show. Finally, I wish to thank you, dear listener, for listening. If you like this podcast, you can support it by donating on patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast. By leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, facebook.com/thesk podcast, or by posting on reddit.com/thesk podcast. Thank you. Good night and good luck.